Hi, I'm Loretta J. Ross, author of Calling In, How to Start Making Change with Those You'd Rather Cancel. I wrote this book because many people have criticized the cancel culture, but few tell us how to stop it or what to do when we're caught up in an online mob attack. I know all too well the power of calling out. I know what it's like to go from feeling powerless to bringing someone powerful to their knees. I've had opportunities to change myself by working with convicted rapists, white supremacists, and your everyday garden variety bigots. I'd honestly rather cancel them. But I've also learned that you don't achieve much that way if your goal is to build a society in which people don't have to be afraid of each other. Calling people out can bring a lot of temporary satisfaction because it feels like power. But is it the best choice for every situation that demands accountability? If you want to build something instead of burning everything down, calling in means creating a revolution within ourselves by changing how we are in relationship with others. We can learn to handle our passion with compassion by behaving in ways that don't wall people out. Calling in acknowledges that we also must emerge as new human beings motivated by integrity and grace instead of punishment and vengeance. Here are 5 insights from my book. Number 1, calling out doesn't achieve what you think it does. It is nearly impossible to force someone else to change their mind without violence. In fact, when you try to force it, they generally double down and refuse to budge. When you call someone out by challenging their beliefs, you have reduced the likelihood that they will listen to you. People generally believe who they trust, and when you call people out, you've proven yourself untrustworthy because you did not take their feelings or other experiences into account. You've shown that you're more interested in being right than being effective. Number 2, there are 5 options you can use during conflict. Most people assume that calling people out is the only and best option for achieving accountability for the harm someone has committed. But that's not true. Calling out, which is publicly shaming people for something you think they've done wrong, is one option. Usually this is done in a tone of outrage and can be particularly vicious over social media. Canceling them is a second option, with which you want to punish them with the loss of their job, reputation, or platform. That's your inner Karen impulse. Calling in, on the other hand, is the third accountability option that uses respect to invite people into conversations instead of inviting them into fights, as calling out and canceling does. Calling on is the fourth option that is particularly useful when you don't want to invest your time and attention into someone else's growth. When you call on someone, you are requesting that they synchronize their inner good opinions of themselves with their outer behaviors. Calling it off is the fifth option I present in the book. This choice recognizes that you have no obligation to continue an unproductive conversation with anyone who is gaslighting you, lying, cherry-picking their facts, or behaving like a troll simply to get on your nerves. Which option you choose depends on who you're talking to. The important signal to send is that you're modeling your commitment to see their complexity. Number 3, you can't influence everyone, and you don't want to waste your time. I created the Spheres of Influence model to help you understand that not everyone wants to grow and change. The Spheres of Influence model helps me analyze who is likely to trust me and helps me chart a path towards increasing my trustworthiness by how I respect others despite our divergent viewpoint. The inner circle of the model is composed of my 90%ers, those whose worldviews mostly align with my own. We pay close attention to politics because we believe in human rights and fight for them. We are intelligible to each other because we use the same language, understand the same cultural references, and read the same news sources. We disagree around the edges, and this is where the call-out culture is most passionate and politically self-destructive. We often spend too much of our time pressuring each other to become 100%ers, as if total alignment with another's perspective is achievable or even desirable. Yet, calling each other in is possible and likely to succeed, especially when faced with a greater threat, unless our fears and our traumas betray our strategic wits. Outside of my 90% bubble are the 75% folks. These are the people with whom I mostly share political and social perspectives, yet they do not pay much attention to politics. They simply want to live their lives compassionately and create a better world for themselves and others. We share the need to be of service to humanity and pretty much agree on a live and let live philosophy. We don't want to tell others how to live their lives and vice versa. I can't use my 90% woke opinions and language with them because it may sound condescending or judgmental. To call them in means I must use words that honor their compassion while not judging their level of political knowledge with the litmus test the 90%ers delight in wielding against others. Like saying unhoused instead of homeless. The only thing we prove with all this language policing is how ruthlessly we pounce on people for not knowing enough, not being enough to suit our particular political views. While we may think they are not woke enough, they think we are not tolerant enough. So we attach labels to each other and doubt that they have anything that can make us think again about our views. The next and largest circle are 50%ers. These are folks who are more conservative than me, and they can go either to the right or the left in politics, depending on which issues they're discussing or who they most trust. My parents were in this middle circle. My father, a military lifer, and my mother, an evangelical Christian, believed in God, America, and family in that order. They were sincere in their beliefs, but not pushy about them. We disagreed on many issues, but they also conveyed great timeless values to their children about community service, family loyalty, and humility. Through the church or an American Legion hall, they would feed the hungry, while as a human rights activist, I asked why people were hungry in the first place. We disagreed on tactics, but we shared the same values. I could call them in based on these shared values when I dove beneath their top-level words to see their hearts and intentions. I eventually learned that they didn't have to change. I had to change how I understood and appreciated them. The next sphere are the 25% people. These are folks whose worldviews are not that different from my parents, but they are more likely to have different meanings for the common words we use. For them, freedom might mean not wearing a mask during a pandemic or believing that everyone should worship as they do because they have figured out the pathway to a righteous life. Freedom to me means something quite different because I believe everyone should worship how they wish or not. For the most part, these are people whose pain is being manipulated by ruthless, ambitious people without moral guardrails. As victims, they're not the ones in charge. Their fear of change means that their pain is real, although their solutions usually are not. Since there is unlikely to be a shared language, worldview, or news sources between this fear and my own, trust is not assumed, but must be earned. Through patience, respect, and humility, I can engage in conversations with them as we exchange experiences on common cultural signposts. For example, I can start a conversation on grits with any Southerner. A shared humanizing experience, like the refusal of my healthcare provider to pay for a vital medicine I need, goes a long way in bridging what seems to be an insurmountable gulf between differing political perspectives. It doesn't cost anything to listen. And I'm often surprised about what I learn from people whose news sources are vastly different from my own. At the very least, I hear what informs their worldview and begin to understand how they arrived at their opinions. The final sphere is what I call the zero percenters. These are the folks who profit from manipulating the fears and anxieties of others, those for whom the cruelty is the point. For reasons I'm not particularly interested in, they've decided that their pathway to power and fortune lies in perpetuating ignorance, hatred, and selfishness. Because we'll never be as talented in shaming those who make a career out of belittling others, calling them out backfires because they're proud of their shamelessness. And even those folks can sometimes be surprisingly kind to their families, magnanimous in their gestures, are trusted by those who believe they will protect them. They are also complicated people, and my ability to influence them is minimal if I care to try. Number four, you don't have to behave badly to prove you've been treated badly. It's a well-known truism that hurt people hurt people. Do you want to be one of them? Calling in helps us to be trauma-informed instead of trauma-driven. Calling in helps us right-size our response to harm so that we calibrate the conflict by using our intelligence and integrity to show up in the positive way we want to present ourselves. We can learn to experience joy by leaning into the discomfort of civilly disagreeing with others. We can strengthen our resilience and be in harmony with our value system. We can invite people into a safe space for their unfolding thoughts that may not be fully developed or reasoned out, but we'll not tee them up for harsh criticisms. Even the most heated exchanges can be based on love and respect. Number five, the first person you call in is yourself. The first thought that pops into your mind when a conflict is happening is usually stemming from your trauma. If you put that thought on pause and give yourself time to consider only speaking aloud your second thought, that will usually be based on your integrity and intelligence. Calling in begins and ends with you. You are self-determining how you choose to show up in the world. You can decide to handle conflicts with love, compassion, and respect. You can make the world a better, less cruel place by treating strangers with the same moral generosity as you would your best friend. Thanks for listening, and I hope reading Calling In is as life-changing for you as it was for me when I wrote it.